The format of tonight's meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, the first of which will speak on the second tradition, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker to share on the second tradition is Maggie.
I did this commitment last year, so I'm an expert. Hi, my name is Maggie. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 9th, 2013. I have a sponsor. Her name is Mika. Atlantic Group is my home group. I'm on steps 9 through 12. And yeah, thank you, Adam, for asking me to speak. I'm extremely nervous. I know you're not like supposed to say that, but I'm absolutely terrified. I've been thinking about it all day. Actually, all month. I've been thinking about it for a month. And I had this idea when Adam asked me that, like, it was an accident. You know what I mean? Like, he just accidentally asked me, and I was like, oh, it's a mistake. It wasn't a mistake, because I'm here. Or if it was, he just went along with it, so thanks. So I'm going to start by reading the short and the long form, because the joke with tradition two is an alcoholic wrote it. So tradition two, the short form is longer than the long form. So, the short form, which is the longer form. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Next part. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. And I do have notes, because I'm just scared I'll start making like weird AA jokes if I don't. So, and I don't know any. So, if you don't, thank you. If you don't care about the traditions, that's totally fine. I didn't care when I came in. I still sometimes don't care, and that's okay. You don't have to like AA to be a part of AA, which is awesome. You just have to do the work and show up. Just to give a little background on the traditions, they came from experience. Just like everything we do here, like we learn best from experience. Like my sponsor can tell me exactly how something is going to go down, but I'm not going to believe it until it's happening to me, until things are on fire. So the traditions came out of trial and error, essentially. The cool thing about AA is that we're just a group of humans, and there's a lot of alcoholics in AA. So we have a lot of character defects. So when we all get together, it's sort of like a celebration of character defects, and the group sort of forms its own. And every group is its own individual thing, its own sort of existing spirit, which is really cool. You can go from one meeting to another meeting, you're just going to have a totally different experience, but at the heart of it is this program. And that's what I think is so beautiful about AA. I could not enjoy a meeting at all, but when I go there, I'm home. Sort of like sometimes when I actually go home. So, the traditions protect us from ourselves. For me personally, like when I came in, I was told that alcoholism is a deadly illness, which is super dramatic. Calm down, but it is. Like I've seen people die. I've known people well who have died from this disease, who are not old and like not, in my opinion, you know, not ready to pass, and they have, and it's because this is. It's cunning and baffling, powerful, and why I think tradition two is super interesting is because it tells us that God is the authority. God is going to speak through us, through our group conscience. And for me, when I am taking my will back and you know, denying that like there is a God and just living on my own self-will, you know, alcohol becomes God or whatever, insert whatever it might be. And it becomes deadly, you know, automatically. It's either the master is alcohol or the master is God. And it's always better to choose God. But again, like trial and error, going through it on your own, experiencing your own things. So when I was reviewing a little bit about this tradition, I was like, it doesn't apply to me. Like, I'm not an old timer. I haven't been here long enough to, like, know enough about this to even talk about it, which might be true, but don't tell me that. And like, the fact is that, like, anyone can be a bleeding deacon. I was speaking to someone about this, and she said, a bleeding deacon isn't an age marker. It's like an expression of the things that I'm doing. Like, it's it's how I'm acting, which is great, because I, you know, anyone can think, oh my God, anyone can be a bleeding deacon. And what that means is just, like, to put it simply, is like, I can show up here and I can go with things and accept things and try to be okay with everything that's going on around me, even if I don't like it. And, like, of course, sometimes I don't like it because I'm a human being and we need the structure that's here. A doesn't have any rulers or, like, kings or queens or whatever. Like, Adam is our overall chair, but he's not the god of this group. He doesn't, like, snap his fingers and people, like, bring him and feed him grapes or something. You know, it's... sorry. But we do have a lot of guidance and a lot of structure. I mean, look around. This is a ginormous group, and I can't even imagine the sort of insanity that would be occurring. I mean, look at the insanity that is occurring, even with so much structure. Like, sometimes, you know, without the structure that we have and without the guidance that we get, it wouldn't work. And it's in my best interest to keep the group running, because I need this group and I need AA as a whole to live. So for me, practicing the principles in all my affairs and practicing this tradition, all the other ones, it's in my best interest. Doesn't mean I always do it, but that's important for me to know. And really, AA as a whole, like, you see a kind of democracy here that you don't see anywhere else. The way that our group is structured, which is, I mean, what I'm going to say is specific to the Atlantic group, because it's so large, it functions with a steering committee. And group conscience is expressed through the steering committee. And that doesn't mean I don't have a say. And I'm always hearing, you know, if you have suggestions, you can go to the chair, you can go to the overall chair. And I believe that. Like, my experience with this tradition is that I believe that our leaders that we've elected by voting or that have been selected by the steering committee do have the group's best interest, and they are putting the group first again and again. That's been my experience. And again, it goes back to unity and it goes back to being useful. And if I'm always keeping those things in mind, if I remember that I'm here to bring the message to someone else, it becomes so much less about my little interests and, like, where my seat is and where I'm putting my stuff down and, like, what time I get there. And it becomes about, like, when I came in, I was dying and I didn't even know it. And, like, we forget that, you know, because we get caught up in character defects and I get caught up in friendships and beautiful things that I've found here. So I also want to talk a little bit about the spirit of rotation. So for our home group, we have commitments for a year, and so the overall chair and the other chairs are all in service for a year. And I've been a part of groups where that is not the case, and it's just someone year after year after year, you think would be like giving out more responsibility, but it's actually just controlling the group more and more. And I've learned over time and continue to learn that everything in my life that causes me pain is from me thinking that I'm in control of it and thinking that, you know, I know what the results are going to be and they have to be like this, this, this. That's always going to bring me pain. It's never, and even if it turns out the way I want, you know, it still feels bad somehow. So for the traditions, if like you've learned nothing at all, that's totally fine. I've been told I have a soothing voice, so maybe it was just like peaceful to listen and not learn anything. Just, like, be informed. I mean, I was brought through the traditions with by my sponsor, and I was pretty uninterested. But, like, I learned, with like, more and more as time goes on, how much they apply to me and how much I have to know these things and why knowing history is important, even if it's sometimes wholly uninteresting. We have a responsibility to be informed and have this informed group conscience. And knowing what the steering committee is doing and knowing who they are, you know, when I got here and I saw the same people sitting in the front every week, I was upset. And then I was told that those are people who have seats because of the service that they've done and the years they've been, and there's reasons for everything. And it didn't even occur to me to, like, stop and ask why things are happening. And, like, become informed here. Learn what AA is. Learn what's going on here. And, like, the love you'll have for this program just by understanding it and just by diving into it is going to serve you. Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Pete H.
Hi, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Pete. It is such an honor to speak at this group. My sponsor, Greg W., is a member of this group. My grand sponsor, Chris B., is a member of this group. And when I got sober, two of my closest friends who basically forced me to do the steps, Charlie P., who asked me to speak tonight, and Brianna, got sober here. I have great respect for the Atlantic group. We were in a line about the Sunday meeting a week and a half ago, and someone was waiting to thank the speaker, and someone said, oh, I hate it when someone, like, hogs the speaker. And I said, this is Atlantic Group. When there's something that can happen in a meeting that's annoying or inefficient, it's someone's job to keep it from happening. And sure enough, someone interrupts it, keep the line moving. And so I love the way this group runs. My home group, just by my stats, I got sober on May 19th, 2008. My sponsor is Greg W. My home group is PAX, which is a men's meeting down on 22nd Street, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday night. See some brothers here tonight. And I'm currently working on the sixth step, which is sort of navigating where the character defects are. And I've had several instances today, even recently, where some of those defects have come out. And as I'm sitting here, what do I talk about? They're there. And there's anger is one of them. And it's something I deal with, and it's something, but luckily I'm in a program. It used to be when anger came out, I thought, oh, there's something highly deficient and wrong about me. I can never tell anyone, and I can never let anyone know what I did. Now, when anger comes out, there's a process. It's called the 10th step amends. It's immediately acknowledging I was wrong, and going to that person and saying, hey, I was wrong. And, you know, and what's even lovelier is sometimes when it happens within the fellowship, and it does, that person, you know, it's just, they understand and it gets you. And, you know, and there's somehow usually, I will say, be very careful of the people you resent in this program, because more often than not, they will end up saving your neck. Happens all the time. Put 10 calls out at 2 a.m. because I'm freaking out, and the first person to call me back is the person I let loose on 3 days ago because I didn't like the way he handled his header on our gratitude list. Yep, that's the person who's going to call me back and pray with me at 2 in the morning. That's what goes down in this program, so be very careful because that's, you know, those are the people you need, and those are the people who get to you, and those are the people who will teach you something about yourself. I came in at 42. Oh, I'm 51. That's another, people always want to know how old people are. I always do. I'm 51. I got sober on my 42nd birthday, and let's just say it wasn't a fun birthday. joined AA. Did not think I was an alcoholic. Did not think I was as sick as the rest of you. I remember thinking, okay, I just need to be able to tell these people who want me to drink that I'm a member of AA. So I'm going to come here once a week. I don't need to get the sponsor. I'm certainly not going to do those steps. I thought the steps were people who just couldn't stay sober, and you came in after relapsing like 60 times. They said, okay, you're going to have to do the steps now. That's what I thought the steps were for. The steps have saved my life. I came for my drinking. I have stayed and continued to stay for my thinking. The steps have saved my life. I didn't do them because I thought I needed them. I did them because Charlie P. said in Mansion Diner, if you don't do the steps, I will kill you. Charlie remains one of my dearest friends. I love him dearly. That was one of, if not the most loving things anyone has ever said to me. In truth, because I need them. years ago, I was in my office after leaving four or five continuous voicemail on a colleague's voicemail that were insane. And I put down the phone and I said, there is something wrong with you. You don't know what it is. It's not wrong with anyone else. But you can never tell anyone. And I never thought about it until I was years sober in this program. What I am, what that is called, it's called alcoholism, and I have it. I have it big time. Alcohol brought me to all sorts of wacky behavior, all sorts of wacky substances, but alcohol is the love. It's what I dream. When I dream of relapsing, I dream of alcohol. When I think of something, it's like it goes there. I love my booze. I loved getting obliterated. I was a blackout drunk, which thank God I was a blackout drunk. Because if I had not been a blackout drunk, I would not have looked at my drinking. Because of my blackouts, I ended up online taking a quiz of, are you an alcoholic? And let me tell you, 30 answers, you think you get... I quickly ascertained that yeses were bad, but I thought, like, 10, you get 10. No, thank you very much. You don't get 10. You get really one. And even then, they're kind of judgy on you. And I know this because I started with 10 and eventually got down to one. And as I was midway through, it dawned on me that I was cheating on an online quiz that no one was watching me take. So I really think the Are You an Alcoholic quiz should just be, have you ever taken an online quiz to see if you're an alcoholic? Yes, congratulations, you're an alcoholic. And let me just say with that, the congratulations. If you're here tonight because you have 20 years sobriety and this is something you do and you have a great program, congratulations, you're here. If you're just checking it out, congratulations, you're here. If you're here because you have a crush on someone in the room, congratulations if you're here. And if you're here and you're drunk, congratulations, you're here. I mean that. Someone said that to me at the beginning. I came in, I thought I was just going to skate by. I remember thinking, oh, when they give me that 90-day coin, I'll accept it. I would just be rude not to. I drank delusionally. I learned it, I think it was a member of this group at a Big Book, an AG Big Book meeting said, denial is when you know something is true and you're saying it's not. Or denial is when you know you have the coin in your pocket, but you're saying you don't. That's denial. Delusion is when you have the coin in your pocket, you don't know it's there, and you say it's not. I drank delusionally, and I recovered delusionally for a long time. I thought that low platform of, I had a friend who just had no sponsor, no steps, no nothing. Friend is now drunk now, but at the time, he was in AA and loving it, and I thought, oh, that's a low platform. I can just step right in. And I arrived at my first meeting full of resentment on May 19th, 2008, and I heard my story. I felt physically lighter saying the words, I am an alcoholic. I had only said them to the woman on the phone at Intergroup, who I later ended up volunteering with. That's a really wonderful story. But Eleanor, great woman, and she sent me to the mustard seed. I went to the mustard seed. I heard my story, and I went to a meeting the next day. Instead of just like skating by once a week, I went to about 150 meetings in my first 90 days. I got my first service commitment at a wonderful meeting called Chapter 5, which I'm someone who's really wonderful and I respect a great deal, founded that meeting. Hello, Dominic. We look forward to hearing from you. Give a little warming up for Dominic. A great honor. Great honor. Had my first service commitment there. I was a greeter. Best commitment ever. I've always had a commitment. I've always had a sponsor. I am not well enough. I believe in God. God was not a problem for me. I have a very traditional Christian background, but I will say that when it comes to the second step of power greater than myself, restoring me to sanity, I am not well enough to go one-on-one with God. I did all sorts of things for 42 years with the approval of God. I did all sorts of things. Oh, thank you, God, for helping this to happen. All sorts of things I thanked God for helping to happen. So for me, I do believe in God. He is my higher power. The power greater than myself in the second step is AA. I need a structure. I need walking in and knowing that chairs are set up. That's a power greater than myself. I didn't set those up. These meeting schedules, this book, which is, by the way, the best piece of literature I bought was the meeting book. There's something to be said. I know we're all online, but there's something to be said for holding it in your hand. It helped me. It made me discover meetings. And And I didn't get that sober with the best of intentions. It was, you know, I heard someone saying, it may have been this group, someone else saying, oh, he has a really good program. I thought, uh-oh. I know how that works. Someone has a bad program. I'm not going to be bad at this. It's bad enough I'm in AA. I'm not going to be bad at sobriety. So there was a lot of show. Thank you very much. And here I am. I'm, you know, 9 and some change years sober. I'm still an imperfect person. Things still happen. I haven't had a drink or a drug. My rent is paid. I have what I need. I want what I have. And I am so eternally grateful for all of you. I would have been dead a long time ago without all of you. And I love this group, and thank you, for my sobriety.
I'm a recovering alcoholic, and my name is Dominic. My sobriety date is September 30th, 1982. Thank you for being here, and thank you very much for asking me to speak, Adam. And thank you, Atlanta Group, for accepting me here. I'll give you a snapshot of my alcoholism. I come from East Harlem. I was born there. I was raised there. I still live there. They call it El Barrio now. But when I was a young man, I used to idolize the guy who was on the corner. And he had a fedora hat. He had beautiful suits. He had a pocket full of money. He had a Cadillac convertible. And he had all the women in the neighborhood. And I wanted to be just like him. And he was a neighborhood racketeer. And as a young boy, I was running numbers for him. And after I left my mother's house, I was involved with people who were not on the list of Dun & Bradstreet. They were on another list, and they used to smile at the cameras all the time. So anyway, that was my lifestyle. You know, I owned after-hour joints. I was involved in bars, restaurants, clubs, that kind of business. I loved it. I loved the action. I loved the money I made. I loved the style. I loved the Copacabana, the Latin Quarter, Basin Street East in my day. You know, we didn't have concerts. You know, I used to go to clubs and piano bars. I loved piano bars. And my drink was bourbon. I used to drink bourbon straight waterback. Loved it. I drank everything else, too. You know, wine, cognac, whatever was there, I drank. I loved it. So my story, you know, I don't want to feed into the grandiosity of my alcoholism. I can get high off of that. I really can. It gives me like a euphoric lift. I loved it. I loved the action. I loved the places that I went to. But most of all, my alcoholism took a lot of things away from me. I was married. I had a child. My wife threw me out. I used to say I left, but she threw me out. You know, she locked the door one day and I couldn't get in. I lost my relationship with my son. I lost my relationship with a lot of things. I lost my relationship with my family. I wound up living with a woman. Her name was Jeannie. That used to be my cocktail waitress. So that's the kind of lifestyle I lived. And it took a lot of things away from me. In the course of my alcoholism, I also did smoke grass. I did a lot of cocaine, I did marijuana, you know, I did heroin. I did it all in my day. But I always had a bottle of booze in the car. A bottle of something, wine, booze, chilled, anything, because I loved it. I loved what it did for me. And the only thing that cocaine did for me was deaden my senses that I was drunk. But I drank. I loved it. I loved the taste of everything I drank. When I was a kid, my father used to put 3 feathers on my gums when I was teething. You know, I loved it. I used to ask for more. I used to get high, I guess, when I was a kid. But that's my alcoholism. So what happened to me? You know, my story is about change. You know, and how I changed by coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I went to prison for life because I was involved in drugs. I came out of prison. I went back to the same relationship I had with Jeannie. And during that time, I went back to my same thing. I didn't change. I learned a few more things in prison to help me get along. I did well, you know. When this happened, I was living on 26th Street with Jeannie, and Jeannie was murdered by a guy I sold drugs to. She was stabbed once in the heart with an ice pick, and she died in the hallway of that building. I wasn't there, but they got him, and it just exacerbated my drinking and my anger. And I became insane. You really didn't want to know me. I was a predator. I was not, you know, I was not a victim by all means. And I just kept on drinking. And I started getting more and more trouble. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was in a bar. And I was with two young ladies, lovely young ladies. We were drinking very heavily. And we were also doing a little cocaine. And I ran out of cocaine. Naturally, I was a dealer. And I went to my stash to get some more cocaine. So I left the two young ladies at the bar. And I got in my car. I had a great suit on. I had a pocket full of money. I looked terrific. I was young. My hair was black. And I got in my car. And I made a turn on First Avenue. And at that time, they had dividers in the street. And I lost it. And I was cursing God. My windshield went red. And I tried to kill myself with my car. Look what you did to me, God. You took Jeannie away from me. I got this life that I really don't want to be in, but I'm doing it anyway because the alcohol fueled that kind of lifestyle. I wound up getting in an accident on whatever street, and it spun my car around. I had a great-looking car. I spun my car around three times. I came out of the blackout or the redout, whatever you want to call it, drove away from the scene of the accident, stopped in East Harlem to get some more stash, and nothing new. There was a cop car in back of me, a cop car in front of me, and I was arrested again. And now I was in trouble. I was now in violation of a life parole. I was in a violation of a probation for assault with the city. It's okay. I don't think I can and do it. Yeah, just bend it down. Thank you, Adam. There you go. How's that? How's that? Is that better? And I was in violation for passing counterfeit notes with the federal government. I was on probation. So I was a four-time loser by this time. So I was arrested. I was brought to the precinct. And I was booked. And they booked me for leaving the scene of the accident at DWI. So I called my lawyer, who had most of my money by this time. And, you know, that I was blessed that I had the money to pay this guy. Because going through the process of all this stuff with him, I got off. And he told me, Dominic, why don't you go to AA? I knew about AA from prison because that was one way to get out of my cell, you know, and go have coffee and cookies and cigarettes, and maybe there'd be a girl that came to the prison, you know, that we could look at. I love women. And that we could look at, and then go back to my cell. But it was another hour or an hour and a half out of that cell. which made me feel great. So I knew about AA, but I didn't prescribe to it, you know. So when he told me about AA, I knew about it. And I didn't want to go. So when this happened, I was now broke. I was a homeless guy with a suit and tie. I asked my mother for my old room back in East Harlem. And she was nice enough to give it to me. God bless her. And I was laying on my bed. And one night, I hadn't been drinking for a couple of days. And I was holding my stomach. I didn't know, but I probably was detoxing at that time. And what happened, I picked up the phone, I called AA, and they said there was a meeting at Lenox Hill. So I got in a cab, I thought I looked good. And I got in a cab, I went to Lenox Hill. And I went inside, and there was a guy in at the table. And his name was Michael. And he was my kind of guy. He had on a blue blazer, a white shirt, a bow tie, horn-rimmed glasses, khaki pants, and deck shoes. And I said, he asked me who I was. I says, I'm in trouble. Blah, blah, blah. And he says, come on, I'll sit you down. And I grabbed him by the arm, and I took him outside the Church of the Heavenly Rest. Now, if anybody knows, there's a couple of benches out there. So we sat on the bench, and I told him what was happening. And he brought me into the meeting. He sat me up front, and I heard three speakers. And one of the speakers is here tonight. And I listened to them, and I laughed, and I cried. I don't know what I was doing. I was still drunk. You know, you couldn't see my eyes. I thought I looked good. I had a beard. I smelled. I hadn't showered. And they took me downstairs for coffee. You know, and it was like a cocktail lounge, you know. At that time, you know, you used to take a break after the beginners meeting. And used to have coffee downstairs in the gym. And I went there, and Michael was introducing me to people. And I was a yeah, but kind of guy. Yeah, but you don't know. Yeah, but this. Yeah, but that. And that's how I was. I knew everything. But this man started to walk across the room. He had horn-rimmed glasses, a blue, I can remember like it was yesterday. He had a blue pinstripe suit, red tie, nice shirt. He was dressed pristine. And he came over to me and he introduced himself, and his name was Bill. And Bill had a funny way of looking at me. And he looked at me, and I was a yeah, but, you don't know, yeah, but. And he'd give me the squinty look, you know. And Bill became my sponsor. So the thing that I learned in the beginning of my sobriety were like five things. You don't drink, you go to meetings. You get a sponsor. You trust God. You do the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you do service. So I started after a while. After about a couple of months, because I still had to get unmocused. I still had to get unmocused, and I started to do these things that Bill directed me to do. See, when I came into the program, there were no suggestions. The old timer says, don't drink, sit down, put your hand down, you don't know what you're talking about. Take the cotton out of your mouth and put it in your ears because, you know, or take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth and listen, right? So I started to do that. And there was a guy named Brian Mines. He's gone now. He was an old mentor of mine. And I was at a beginner's meeting at Duffy Hill, which used to be it was somewhere. And I went to raise my hand. And he's the guy who took my hand, put it in my lap, and he says, Dominic, shut up. He says, take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth and listen. And I took it. I respected him. He was a sand hog. He was a, and at this meeting, there were a lot of guys that I respected, the truck drivers, bartenders, construction workers, you know. So I respected those kind of people. And I also respected a lot of men at the Lenox Hill Group because they used to come every week dressed, shirt and tie, sport jacket, suit, whatever. And the women used to come, you know, and look good, pearls. Pearls, thank you. Pearls, you know, they dressed well. They dressed well. It was called the Church of the Heavenly Dressed at that time. And, you know, speaking about that first meeting that I went to, and when they took me downstairs to have coffee, I looked around, and I saw all these people dressed well. Diamonds, fur coats, Rolex watches. And I said to myself, I could make a score here and go right down to South America. You know, criminal mind, you know, I still had a criminal mind. You know, so we talk about the process of change. And how I started to change was starting to do those five things that I haven't expressed earlier. And as I did that, I started to change. I got a job driving a construction renovation man around for $3.50 an hour. $3.50 an hour. And I used to go with him, and he used to let me sit in the car, and he used to read the big book and the 12 and 12. And I started to get sober. I started to do these steps. And after about a year, I started getting sponsees in my life. You know, it wasn't about my outside issues. They didn't count. I had one of my mentors tell me, you know, you got outside issues, put them on the rack at the door and come in and tell me about how you stayed sober today. I didn't drink today. What step am I using today? And for me, it's always the first three steps. You know, it's always the first three steps. I'm powerless over alcohol, and my life will become unmanageable. I get a power greater than myself in my life. And I've been turning my will and my life over to that power on a daily basis in the third step. Without those three steps, I'm nowhere. Because my higher power doesn't exist if I'm not working those three steps. So as I did that, I got a job at the Alcoholism Council of Greater New York as an information hotline specialist. When the calls used to come in, I used to direct them to counselors, rehabs, lawyers, anywhere, you know, and get them in, get them started on the progression of their sobriety. And it also helped the progression of my sobriety. So as I did that, I went to school, I became a CAC at that time. I became a credentialed alcoholism counselor. I went to college for 7 years at night at Hunter College. I got a double major in sociology and psychology, and I became, as we know it today, a CASAC. And for 20 years, I worked in the field of alcoholism. So becoming a half-assed racketeer and then becoming a mental health worker, you know, and helping these people with problems of alcoholism and drugs, and also MICA patients, you know, mental patients, I learned a lot. And what I did was I learned a lot about myself. And I took that information and I put it into the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. What did they say? Clean house, trust God, do service. And I've been doing that for a lot of years. And my life, I got to tell you, my life changed on a daily basis. I didn't expect it to. You know, I didn't expect my life to change. What was I going to do with this alcoholic character that I had nurtured for over 40 years in my drinking? What was I going to do with this character? I didn't know. But watching you people stay sober one day at a time, you know, fed into that hope that there might be something for me. And through that hope, I started to give it away. And every time I gave it away, I came back for more to fill it up so I can give it away again. You know, I got a few sponsees in this room. God bless them. And they teach me something every day. They teach me how to be tolerant and patient, which sometimes I'm not today. But they teach me patience and tolerance. And they also teach me a lot about love. You know, because without the love in these rooms, I don't have a shot. They say, you know, you got AA, now go find a life. AA is my life. Without AA, I have no life. In the course of these years that I've been sober, I have 6 children. Four of them have come back into my life. And just recently, 2 have come back. So, you know. So I got 4 children, 2/3 are back in my life. And I love them. And they're great people. And they love me. And they respect me. And I only got this through being responsible in AA. I guess I'm a caretaker. I took care of my mother for 10 years when she was sick. I was there. I buried her. You know, I buried a lot of friends in this program. You know, the legacy that we have here is about the people that were here. It's about AA. It's about the basics. I don't drink. I go to meetings. I got a sponsor. I trust God. I work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I do service. Not as much as I used to, but I still do service. I'm always on the phone. Somebody's always calling me, thank God. I'm always connected. And without that, I wouldn't have a life. And I know a lot of people in this room, I'm sure. And I love them too. They've been around for many years with me. And then they've been the basis of my sobriety. I show up, they show up. I show up, they show up. And together, we stayed sober one day at a time. So if anybody is new here, I was told a long time ago, for me, as a recovering alcoholic, relapse is not an option for me, for this recovering alcoholic. It's not an option for me. I don't have a chance. If I pick up a drink at this time in my sobriety, it's kind of foolish. But that doesn't mean that I don't have the euphoric recall of that shot of bourbon, which I could taste every once in a while. I get like Pavlov's dog when I talk about bourbon. I start to lick my lips. But all the things that I have in sobriety today, I owe to AA. And it's about those 5 things that I've told you that I do during my sobriety. It has nothing to do with anything else. It has nothing to do with my relationships, a job that I had, money that I lost. It has nothing, outside issues, nothing to do with that. I don't share that with sponsees. If I got a problem, I'll talk to my sponsor. You know, some people need outside help. That's okay. But he don't belong in this room. What belongs is in this room is what step am I working today? I hear a lot of people say, I'm working 10, 11, and 12. I can't work 10, 11, 12 if I don't have 1, 2, and 3. You know, it's like the waltz, you know? 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And that's what keeps me sober. The basics of this program. I don't drink. I go to meetings. I got a sponsor. I trust God. I do service. And I work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank you very much for my sobriety.